If you put us in the same boat, we have different oars, we're doing different jobs, we have different levels of accountability and responsibility. But if you link those together so that, yeah, I have authority, but I'm also responsible and I'm going to be accountable, now it starts working. Otherwise, you know, give me power. Sure, I'd be happy to give you power. How accountable are you going to be?
Welcome back to Season 3 of the Ripple Leader Podcast by the Trebuchet Group. My name is Seth Silvers, your co-host, along with Chris Hutchinson, CEO of the Trebuchet Group. If you've listened to our previous two episodes, you know that I'm a young business owner aspiring to build a business that makes a difference. And on each episode of this season, Chris and I are having candid conversations of challenges and issues that business owners, managers, and leaders face while growing a company. On this week's episode, we talk about responsibility and ownership. As a leader, you have to take ownership over everything that happens under your watch. But how do you do that while also getting your team members to step up and take ownership and responsibility over the work that they are doing? That and more is what we talk about on today's episode of the Ripple Leader Podcast. So, Chris, I'm a young business owner, and I've heard many people say something along the lines of, my responsibility as a business owner really is everything. Like, everything comes back to a sense of ownership for me. If one of my employees messes up, I have to take responsibility, that kind of thing, which feels true in a sense. I know that there's an extreme level of ownership that's required to build a business. But I also know that without a team that takes initiative and takes responsibility, I can't build anything because I can't do it all on my own. I'm going to hit my glass ceiling really, really quick. So help me understand this tension of taking ownership over everything that happens under your watch in the business and empowering ownership to your team.
Yeah. That's a big question.
Yeah, just give me the quick answer.
It's a quick answer, the short answer. One thing is that you can't step away from that responsibility of ultimate, the ownership. You know, where the ownership lay, where it stays is where that responsibility is going to be. There is a big trend right now. A small trend has been continuing of employee-owned companies. And the idea is to try to poke at that a little bit. Not that people get to make this call about everything. Employee-owned companies means that essentially they have an internal stock program where they have a stock and they can build up and have, as part of the value the company builds, it builds their retirement portfolio, being part, this company being the main part of it. So if you think about it that way, it works pretty well. I think the challenge is in a number of ways. So ultimately, you're responsible because, by the way, if you don't do anything to empower other people, then you're still responsible. So it's always going to come back to you. And that's one of the crappy ROIs of ownership, is that by omission or commission, something you've done or not done has probably caused this, and you'll end up paying it at some point. The good news is that I believe that with the sharing of accountability and responsibility and authority, you can actually start having other people step into that. And that is very powerful for them, and not only for the business to help it work better, but also for people to feel a sense of personal responsibility and connection to the business, which can keep them there longer, which can make their, not as like a trapping way, but it's like they can invest in something that they can see return in. It's like the difference between renting or buying a house, that they're kind of buying the house in a way through what they do. Right. It does start with you. It does start with you as a leader to figure out, well, what part of the responsibility that I'm holding is healthy and good for me, and what part is not helpful and healthy for other people in the business.
Because you can't just blame everybody else for anything. I'm sure that
right. We've
all seen business owners and leaders that it's crazy. Nothing is ever their fault.
Yeah, so they're actually like, it's sort of the counter thing. It's like they're like actively not taking responsibility for things, even though they're feeling that responsibility. And frankly, the lonely at the top thing is true, because nobody, unless they're in that ownership position, they will not know what it feels like to have that pressure on them, to care and then feel like, wow, what I decide, if I pick a wrong strategy here, or if I make a decision between two different things and it turns out to be the wrong thing, they'll suffer, you know, and I can't do anything about that. I can only do a certain amount. So ultimately, I'm responsible for that suffering, even if I did the best I could at the time.
Right. So what would, I guess, first off, let's talk about the ownership side of, you know, taking more ownership. Yeah. And then I would also like to ask more about how do we give more ownership.
How do we share ownership?
Yeah. So what would be kind of some questions that we should be thinking through as a leader, as a business owner, and I'm thinking in my own business,
yeah,
of am I taking ownership over the things I need to be taking ownership or
right.
responsibility
right.
in my own day-to-day efforts with my company?
One of the most centering questions that I know, for a lot of reasons, is what does the business need? What does the business need can get you stepping back out of your own stuff. It also depends. Like, if this business is here as a hobby business and that's all it's going to be, well, what the business needs may be very close to what you need. If this is going to be a long-term venture, the business may need something different than what you uniquely bring to it all the time. So it is going to depend on what your picture of that is. But this is the challenge is, like, and you and I both suffer from the founder syndrome, which you can look up on Google. I talk to somebody like, well, you might have some founder syndrome going there. Like, what's that? I go, no, this has been around for a long time, way before us. It's what happens when people get into this position. It's not anything to do with you or me. And what I frequently do is, if I had a dry erase board, I'd write these on a horizontal line, and I would say the ultimate vision of the company, the strategy of the company, the structure of the company, the role of, in this case, owner, and you personally. And they're all equal. They're all equal on the same line. Like, an attack to any is an attack to all. Somebody says, I don't think that strategy is good. You feel it in your heart. It's like this red hot piercing dagger kind of thing. Or, what are we doing in this business? Or, do we really know where we're going? It hurts, right? And ultimately, I think to get past founder syndrome, you have to move it from a horizontal line to a vertical line. There's a hierarchy. Vision's on top. Then it's going to be the strategy. Then it's going to be the structure. Then it's going to be the role. Then it's the person. And anything that changes above changes the things below. And if you start thinking about it that way, you know, we're all, like, the person is serving the role. The role is serving, and it's a service. You know, it's leaning on you. You're not at the top of a golden throne with a big scepter. You're standing on the bottom, and all this stuff is on your shoulders. So there is a lot of responsibility in that, because it ultimately, how fast it grows, and there's a lot of conditions, but it will come down to you and how you connect with other people and help empower them. Also depends on the business. If this was a super transactional business, it's a different kind of responsibility than when, like, for instance, you and I think have businesses where we're deeply connected with the people and helping them more than just the service. We're helping them in the way that they're growing and sharing their business, which reflects right back onto how they're working themselves.
Yeah. And it just gets overwhelming at times, honestly. Like,
oh, yeah.
All of these, I feel like my office could just, every wall could be filled with different diagrams and triangles and,
yeah,
you know, arches and different shapes of leadership analogies of, like, it's so easy to think through all of these, like, oh yes, I should do that. And I should, you know, here's my responsibility as a business
right.
owner and stuff.
Right.
When it's like almost crippling to think about taking ownership over everything in the business.
Yes.
But also it's kind of necessary. It's hard. This tension is hard, especially being somebody who really wants to be able to do everything.
Yeah, I think it depends on what you want to get to ultimately. I mean, I've seen, and my business has grown and gone down because I'm still learning what are the pieces that I can actively have other people do, and what are the pieces that I really either want to do myself or feel like I'm honoring the mission of the business doing myself. And that line moves around a bit. On the models, you know, it's sort of like, I mean, we've recently seen things like all models are wrong, some are useful. I think, you know, in terms of COVID and, you know, like, which one's going to tell it? None of them are going to tell you exactly what it is, but all of them can be useful in informing what's possible, what scenarios could happen. And I guess that's the way I think of that. I mean, I know I throw out a lot of things that it's sort of, I have a visual mindset, and so I'll throw out things that could be all over dry erase board. And I think the vital thing is important. It almost links back to what we talked about. What's the culture? What are the behaviors at a high level you're trying to bring together? And then what would serve that? And then that starts giving you a smaller set of possibilities. You know, if there's a tool that let's pretend there's a, you know, 50 ways to manipulate your employees, and it had some really great tools in here that could really make people do what you want, but your business is built on honoring others. Those are incompatible. So you can start chucking some of the things and go, you know, yeah, there's an idea in here, but it doesn't fit with my philosophy or my values. When it does fit, grab the tool and use it. And I think you'll find you'll get a limited subset of tools that really do work for you. But if you don't know where you're going, you don't know the values you want to have there, it's hard to then decide which ones are going to work, because otherwise it gets to that horizontal line of, does it work for me or not?
Right.
And I imagine you're a flexible guy. I am too. I can make a lot of stuff work. Mm-hmm. Which ones are going to help others? And what are we ultimately going toward? That's where the decisions start happening. Like, that's out, this is in.
Yeah, and I think there's this place we have to get to as leaders where there's this healthy relationship with responsibility. You know, I am aware of the pressure that I have on my shoulders, but I probably have some systems and people in place to make sure that that pressure is not crushing me.
Yeah.
And then we start to give this to our team. You know, I've realized this year as our company's been growing that I can have all of these great ideas of what we want to accomplish over the next year or 10 years or 20 years. Mm-hmm. But I really can't do any of that by myself.
Right.
For the first few years of my business, I feel like I tried doing that more and more. And then I realized, like, oh, there's a very low glass ceiling that you hit.
There's only so much stuff to go around.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also only one of me, and that's not because I'm unique. It's because everybody's unique. So you can't just hire replicas of yourself. And so we have to figure out how to transfer responsibility, how to empower responsibility. So what are some ways that we can actually get, and I say we, meaning I, what are some ways that I can get people on my team to take more responsibility and more ownership in what we're trying to accomplish long-term?
Well, I think, again, harkening back to a previous podcast, transparency is actually really vital, because if it's in your head, it's going to be hard to get out. What's most important for the organization? If that's put on, in our case, a Google Sheet that everybody has access to and they can see, and in fact, we do a thing called The Great Game of Business. It's a book written by Jack Stack, great book, about a guy who really helped turn around a piece of International Harvester that was going bankrupt and taught the people there how to do business, how business worked, so that they weren't just expert mechanics and the best engine mechanics in the world. They were people that could figure out, you know, when to scrap something versus when to remanufacture it, what their productivity could do to the actual bottom line. And he involved them in the getting a stake in the outcome so that they actually, you know, could benefit from it. So linking those things together, people got pretty excited. So that's part of what we do. We have a gain sharing program that we have, and it's very clear, it's very transparent. We know where we are at any time. We do a weekly huddle with all our metrics that go from how the impact we're having with people to what are we doing around our sales to how's our marketing doing, down and in including profitability, short-term and long-term, and because that's what drives the gain sharing. And people can see their own individual contributions, and everybody knows in our company what each other is making. So we are transparent about that. So, and there's a ratio, 2.5, that whatever I'm making in my salary, base salary, as an advisor, I need to be contributing either through delivery or sales of 2.5 times that to the top line. Right now, that's a very empowering thing, because everybody can see their contribution, how it's helping or not. In fact,
you probably can't hide.
You can't hide. In fact, right now, there's some lines that are zeros, and it's super uncomfortable for the people. It's not like, well, Chris likes them, so they'll stay around. It's like, how are you contributing? If it's not here, what's happening? And in this case, with COVID, we've really reassessed and actually put in some metrics that are around activity, because we can't get the same results with the same activity. So we're trying to up our activity about how are we connecting with people through phone calls and emails, and what are we doing there? And with the hopes that as we invest in people, eventually it's going to come to where that karmic deposit pays off and we start getting money back. But that linkage is not as clean now.
So you're saying that the transparency, that we'll use this one example that you've given totally open books.
Yep.
I mean, when you and I were talking before we hit record, I asked how business was, and you mentioned how much you lost last month and how much you made this month. And people don't talk about those numbers, really.
No.
That's like all private and stuff. So you're saying that being transparent has actually given more ownership.
Absolutely. It gives more responsibility, because they can see how they're contributing and how they're not contributing. And the challenges we face together when we're all going down, it's like, what's happening? Or can we save costs? And that there's a reward that people are earning together that ties back to it. So that transparency actually gives by the way, none of the metrics that are on the sheet, I do anything about. They're all delegated. So people have different line responsibilities, and we rotate them every so often. it's not that one of our members is doing all the sales, but they're the ones tasked with going in our system, getting the right sales numbers and putting them up. Or the right the person who's going to be doing the finances, that's not always the same person. So that everybody has a feel for what it's like to be reporting on a metric and seeing how we're doing and wondering, so why do you think that's down? Why do you think that's up? Those are the questions I get to ask. Or maybe even like, what are the factors you see? That helps us be together on one task versus, well, we'll see what the owners do. So we're sharing that visibility. I think that's a big part of it. Part of it's also sharing the gains. We're not sharing 100% of the profits. Some of that goes to my wife and I as business owners, but people can see how much that is. And right now we've not been taking very much because we're concerned about where the future cash flow is going to come from.
Mm-hmm. So what else? There's transparency, and it's when you hear it that way, you're like, oh, everybody should do that. But then obviously on the back end and practical end, it becomes more challenging.
There's some hard parts. Going into it was very hard, and I've seen research that says when you go to like showing everybody's salaries, everybody will be a little sad for a while. Because the stories we make up in our head, like I'm doing really well. Well, I guess I'm on par with somebody. It feels like you're taking, but that's reality, right? Let's make it reality. And Chris isn't taking away 50% of the business. It's a very small portion.
I guess before we talk about some other things, how did you decide to do that?
Part of that was the Great Game. They talked about that was important. The open book management wasn't invented by Jack Stack, but it was probably popularized by him. That when he was in such a horrifically bad shape, he felt he had to show the business what they needed to earn, otherwise they wouldn't have a business. It wasn't like, I'm doing my best job as an engine mechanic, you go do your thing. It's like, if I don't do that in a way that helps the business, I'm not helping I'm gonna be out of a job. So that linkage of a disaster really helped him. And just the other, I was in the military and you could see what people made. And, you know, so when I got to corporate America and they were like, no, you can't talk to anybody about salary. I saw a lot of what I considered inequities popping up and nobody was really held accountable for them because they were just like my ability to negotiate or somebody else's ability to feel like they were able to say, here's what I need for the job.
So it's like gender pay gap. How do things like that, seem like there'd be much room for that.
Well, I will tell you that there, because we have this ratio, right? 2.5, it's just very clear, and you know, that may change in the future, but that's what we've been going with. And there were two people who put down salaries, one was twice the other. And we had a conversation like, how okay are you with that? And the person who put the lower amount said, no, I'm gonna be 3/4 time. I think this is what's gonna work for me. I'm okay with that. And the other person said, yeah, I'm okay with that too. But it was uncomfortable because it was like, is this person twice as good? No, they're committing to twice the output. So that's talk about personal responsibility, right? This is shared and collect and individual responsibility. So that was really helpful, I think, having that transparency.
So what else?
Yeah.
When we're talking about like giving responsibility or how to kind of get our team to take more responsibility, take more ownership over what we're doing.
I've tried to do this, and I've done this with clients too. I mean, I'm using a lot of the examples of my own business because we're down to the nitty gritty. What I've tried to do is, with that in mind, usually financial, but not always, is almost ask for what amounts to like a little mini business plan. We want to go do this. How would we know? You know, how could we ooch? What's the information we would get? How much are we willing to invest? By the way, everybody knows they're going to see that investment, whether it pays off or not. So that kind of helps as a backdrop. It's not just my piggy bank. And looking at things from a pragmatic point of view to say, well, what would help our clients? And I guess it's asking the questions around having them ask themselves questions like an owner would. Not giving them full responsibility because we're going to help support that. But having them share also in the accountability of that. How's it going to go? We actually have pretty healthy discussions when we go hire somebody because we have not yet hired somebody that wasn't profitable within 6 months in terms of providing. And so that's the way it is. That's the truth. Are people willing to essentially put their bonuses on the line to get that person? That's a very different conversation than, yeah, I guess we like her or like him. It's like, can we get, and oh, by the way, what responsibility do they have to help that person get there? It's not how good my onboarding is.
Yeah, that's
it's how we're doing it together. So again, I think if you put us in the same boat, we have different oars, we're doing different jobs, we have different levels of accountability and responsibility. But if you link those together so that, yeah, I have authority, but I'm also responsible and I'm going to be accountable, now it starts working. Otherwise, you know, give me power. sure, I'd be happy to give you power. How accountable are you going to be? One guy I know who has a, it's not, it turns out that there are structures under 15 people that are, there's a lot more flexibility in how you might share ownership. That employee ownership program, I said, is for 15 people or more. We're way under 15. I don't see us ever getting that big. He actually has, I think there are 8 principals or something, maybe even more. And every year they go down and every single person signs the promissory note. And he's like, it drives the bank insane. It's like, can't you just do this, right? But he's saying, look, if you are one of the principals in this business, you're on the hook just as much as me. So it's not a disproportionate, like, I'm on the hook because it's my personal promissory note. You can say, why aren't we spending money on this? Let's go have fun. But you know what? Ultimately, it will be like, I lose my house kind of thing. So not that you want that other person to lose the house, but we're in this together. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about this kind of level of commitment pyramid.
Yes.
There's kind of a way to look through and see, you know, where people stand as far as commitment. Talk me through that.
Yeah, there's a number of things. And I think a lot of organizations, it's very easy to confuse agreement and commitment.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that's we actually do it with a thumb check on when we're working in as a team, and it works pretty well. Uncomfortable, but good. So we would say, let's say we're talking about something. We're going to hire a person. Okay. So a thumb up would mean I am 100% committed and I agree fully. This is the right person to go. A thumb sideways would be, you know, I have some minor reservations or I don't agree with this 100% and I'm 100% committed. It's not halfway committed, kind of let's see how it goes, right. Which I'll get in the pyramid in a minute because there's a little more distinction between up and sideways, but I'm committed. Thumbs down mean I can't commit. This is a bad decision for the team. It's not that I don't like it. Maybe I don't have all the information. Maybe whatever. I'm going to put my thumb down. We don't talk to thumbs sideways. We only talk to thumbs down. Because, okay, tell us, help us. Help us make a better decision. Tell us what we're doing wrong. So if everybody is sideways, though, it means nobody agrees, but we're all committed. Unless that's something imposed on us from outside, like furloughs or something that nobody would like, that's not a good place to be. So it needs to be mostly thumbs up and sometimes the idea that if I disagree with this, I can stop this in its tracks because we only do things when everybody agrees, which on one side is very collaborative, on the other side is incredibly damaging because you can basically have one person disagreeing that feels like, well, I can stop anything in the tracks. Doesn't help. So we try to get past that. A more refined version is that Cy Wakeman, who wrote No Ego and Reality-Based Leadership, really cool lady. She has this pyramid, 5 levels, like a lot of these pyramids of 5 levels. And essentially, it talks about the commitment level that you have to a change, to something that you want to have, to something you're trying to implement. The bottom is, I'm aware. I know what's happening. You know, that you can hear that's just like, whatever, you know. The second one is willing. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea. I'm willing to play. The third level up is I'm an advocate. I'm going to say that change is needed. We need to make that change. That's a good change. And then the top two, usually she colors them a little different because this is where you really get activity. So the second from the top is active participant. I am actively participating in this change. I am going to make it happen. And the top is a driver where you're actually helping other people make it happen. Right now, my team, in the changes we're trying to make in our business, we're saying unless we have everybody in the top two sections of that, we are not going to do that. Interesting. So it's a very uncomfortable place because we're asking for it. You know, that thumbs up or sideways, it's not like, yeah, I'm aware, I'm willing, you know, I'll sort of, you know, that's not okay because it's fundamental changes in what we might do. We have to be very high in that. So we're going to have a lot of conflict. We're going to talk about a lot of things until people say, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, there's probably not much space for really good ideas that I don't have anything to do with the
exactly. And we're trying to prune those off like crazy. I would say that that's one of our challenges as a company is that we have lots of great ideas and not all the follow through because we're doing things for clients. So we're trying to be ruthless with ourselves in terms of saying what's in, what's out, at least for now. You know, we may do it later on, but we're trying to really put filters of what can we get done in 30 days? What can we get in 90 days? If it's outside of that, we don't want to be talking about it. Just put it in the maybe someday bucket.
So some people don't really want that in the workplace. Like there's a lot of people that want a job that they don't have to be an active participant. You know, they can clock in, do their work, clock out. You know, maybe another person that clocks in.
Well, how about for your company? Where would it be for your company? Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So people could just clock in, clock out. They're just like, yeah, whatever.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. no, that's not what I want.
Okay. What do you want?
I want my teammates to be, on our last episode, we talked about values and you used the example of innovative.
Yes.
So that's one of my, I'd say, desired values, because I probably couldn't pick as many solutions or ways we've practiced that.
And that'll be fun until somebody's like, you're not being innovative enough, you got to change everything more. Yeah. And then you're going to be like, wait, not that innovation. Anyway, go ahead.
So, I mean, I want people on my team to be innovative. I want them to be willing to bring new ideas and jump into new ideas. And I want them to be excited to be learning how they can do their job better. So I feel like I want them to be pretty actively involved. But then there is the contrast to where, you know, for a position that's like an admin, administrative role, you know, not generally revenue producing, it's like you don't want the job to be as simple as just, okay, come in and do these tasks and then leave.
Yes.
But you also don't necessarily want an admin role, or the way I've been thinking about it is I don't necessarily want my admin coming to me and questioning the strategy of implementing this for a client, because that's not really the place for it. So I guess I struggle with this, because it seems like there's some jobs in the workplace where, you know, it's just a job, just people coming in.
There could be just a job. The challenge that I'd give to you is, what would the difference between somebody who showed up just as a job and somebody who was deeply committed to making sure revenue occurred?
And I guess I say that, but then the person who is our current admin role is amazing, and she's bringing ideas and she's going above and beyond. It's like she's making herself invaluable and stuff. And that's, in a sense, I mean, that's what I wanted. And when I interviewed for the position, it was if there's opportunities to make your role better and make the process better, then I'll always be for that. And in the last handful of interviews, I've always said, I want a value in something that I care about. Is I care more about things getting done well and getting done quickly than them being done my way.
Okay, good.
In a sense that I know most of the way to do our things.
Sure. You know a way.
Yeah, I know a way, but giving them permission to realize, like, my way is not the only way.
Well, here's one of the ways I think to help that is to distinguish whether it's your way or something is figuring out, let's pretend you do it your way, what are the outcomes from it?
Right.
And then having those as the qualifiers, and then somebody can be very creative to get there. Really quick story, had a guy up on the north coast of Boston. They have mansions there. There's salt-driven spray. There's certain ways you have to build these houses so they don't corrode and have problems. He had I think it was 13 or 17. It was a very large number of steps that you had to do to seal siding on a house. It was a very, very complicated way. And there was some younger carpenters who were like, we think there's a better way. Nope, this is the way you have to do it. You know, in fact, the grading was not on the result. It was how you followed the way. And so what I did is actually, and I did this, you can do this yourself, is walk yourself through. If I do it all the ways I think needs to be done, what are the outcomes that would be different if I didn't? So it's not, so you get to the result, and it was like it had to look good from 3 feet away. I asked him questions finally, because he's like, you just have to do it the way. I said, oh, humor me. So we got to a certain place, and it was, you had to look good from 3 feet away. It had to be watertight. It had to be da-da-da-da. Anyway, so it had all those ways. And the carpenters came up and said, okay, we can do it in three. And we can meet that in three. It's like, no way, right? And so they literally built a little demo and showed him. And he was like, wow, I never thought. But as long as it was his way, now he knew his way got him to the result that he was important. But if you can take that result and get out of your head and put that outcome down there, and then say, how can we get to this effectively that doesn't sacrifice our values and other things like that, you might find a lot of creativity. That's not addressing or guessing what your strategy is. It's helping you get there better, and they have some autonomy and creativity, and they're going to be happy about what they get to do every day. They're like, I did this. This is mine.
Right.
So that's the possibility. I'm not saying it happens, but that's the possibility of trying to figure out how do you activate that inspiration and motivation that they have versus imposing it or expecting it not to be there because they just don't
have it. And like a super practical example of how that plays out for us is, so for video editing. You know, there's a process for videos that we make for a client. And so also, you know, a video that looks really awesome now is probably was different than a video that looked awesome 18 months ago and 5 years ago. And so it's always funny to go back and look at
it. I've seen the movies and you're like, wow, those movies are really stupid almost.
Yeah, exactly. Good and stories. So we have a process for, you know, we have to have processes for here's how we make a video for our clients. But at the same time, okay, we always probably need to be thinking about new ideas and innovating. And so my video editors need to be thinking about that. But that's costly because if they're, you know, going and researching new tactics and new ideas and testing things, which testing things means most of them will fail. And, you know, you might hold on to one. Like that's an investment. And so at times it feels safer and easier and cheaper to just have
this is the way.
Have your SOP, have your process, and have somebody follow it.
I think some of that's really good. And again, I don't think that SOPs are not a good idea. I think it's this is the SOP of what we do. And what we're striving for is this for the client and this for us and this for the quality of the product. It's not just, you know, because ultimately, if you were an owner, you'd decide, well, I'm willing to invest a little because I'm actually going to have a better product that gets us more money. Or I mean, you're making those trade-offs in your head. Yeah. How could you equip people to be able to make those?
So that's probably the difference is, you know, if you have your SOP on a paper, you have the outcome.
Ideally at the top.
At the top.
And basically,
the outcome. The goal is the outcome over implementing this process. This process is the current way.
There's a thing in the military called commander's intent. And the commander's intent is right at the top. And it says, here's what we're intending, and then it gives you the mission. But if you get there and you figure out you need to do something, you don't go, oh, well, sorry, can't do the mission. You're like, how do I otherwise get to the commander's intent? Mm-hmm. And so that's exactly the same thing in terms of what are the outcomes we want. And you have to be thoughtful about the outcomes because if you do them really small, like let's say Enron, one of their outcomes was we want our stock price to be high. That was the intent, very clear. They did some horrific things and that ultimately caused much, much more damage to a lot of people's economic health and the company went bankrupt because they didn't say, oh, by the way, and follow our, I mean, they had stated, by the way, stated values that sounded really nice, but nobody did them because they knew this other thing overrode them all.
Yeah, I think that brings people into that active participant phase. Like if my video editor knows that, you know, the outcome is a 30-second video that engages their audience and drives traffic, and they know that's the outcome, then, you know, if they run into a problem in step 4 of 20, then that outcome pulls them into it.
Exactly.
Into figuring
maybe
out.
Maybe they've raised the flag and get you involved and say, you know, I don't think this is going to get us where we want to go.
Right. Yeah. As opposed to just saying, hey, here's the process.
I did it. And I think it's pretty crappy, but oh well, that's what we had. And that there's a challenge in there. And it does ask more of people. Hopefully they're adding more value, so they're earning more value. And they're going to feel more like they can make a difference. If they are just like show up, push the broom, then yeah, maybe they don't need to really care about it. But I think that even people, I heard a story about some guys who were, I don't know if it was guys, it was janitors who were working in a long-term care facility for people who had comas, memory issues and comas. And so, and they were actually, a group was kind of seeing how they were doing and how they felt connected to their work. And they said, very connected to their work. And the person went around and followed them. They actually were fixing cracks in the ceiling. And they're like, no, it's not even your job description. What are you doing fixing cracks in the ceiling? And these people said, well, you know, I don't know what they can see. What if they're looking up there and seeing these cracks in the ceiling all day long, all the time? They can't move their eyes, you know? Shouldn't we respect them that way? So it was a deep sense of purpose and change and ability for them to make a difference by some small thing that wasn't even asked of them. So that's the kind of thing, I think, if you can tap those kind of deep human needs, people are going to do great things and they'll feel proud of them and they'll help your company.
It sounds like when we're talking about this challenge, this tension of getting our team to take more responsibility, we have to invite them into it. We have to be willing as a leader to invite them into a responsibility, invite them into the process. If I'm not willing to part from my way,
it sounds like my
hopes are, you know, it's just not going to happen.
Absolutely. One of my favorite sayings, I think I coined this one, you know, there's a lot of them, but organizations go as far as the leaders can grow and let go.
Hmm.
organizations go as far as leaders can grow and let go. And growing means doing things you haven't done before, maybe trying stuff out. Letting go might be something that you are amazing at, but if it's only you that can do it, and I sit here indicted myself. There's things right now I feel like I'm the best at in my company, and that's holding back my company because not other people, either I'm feeling that way or just not letting them have that opportunity, and that's causing them to not be able to contribute in the way they could.
So as we bring this conversation to a close, I'd love to just ask, what are some examples over the years of times where you've had to let go in order to get some of your people up that pyramid?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's definitely a lot of, I think I use a lot of intuition in my facilitation when I'm working with people and I'm really connected to them. And other folks have that too, or they might have a different style. And just being able to be respectful of that, letting go of like, well, I know how I would do that, doesn't mean that that other person can't do it well too. And that's been, even when I say that out loud, it sounds incredibly selfish and sort of like self-congratulatory on my part. That was not my intention. I just deeply know what I want to do. So being able to step back from that and say, there's another way, thinking what the commander's intent is, well, as long as it does these things, I think it's the right kind of thing. And then inviting people in and letting them see like what they could do. Sometimes they'd succeed, sometimes they wouldn't succeed. They go, yeah, we kind of talked about that. And I said, okay, well, next time we can do it. Don't worry about this last time as much. Let's go forward. So letting people really into able to partner with me or just facilitate things by themselves using some of our tools was uncomfortable. And it's amazing because there's only so much me to go around. There's only so much of you to go around. Mm-hmm. Now we have more capacity. And when I was out for my cancer surgery, people could keep going. I couldn't have done that before, you know. It would have been like the business ground to a halt.
Yeah,
that wouldn't have helped anybody. So it's hard and very rewarding when it works.
Yeah. I remember, I got married and started my business within a year of each other. So yeah. Kind of.
A little bit of life changer.
Yeah, exactly. And I started my business with a business partner. So kind of got married twice in the same year.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And we delayed our honeymoon. So we went, I think, 3 months after we got married.
Yeah.
And I remember, I don't think I slept at all the night before our honeymoon. I think that I was on my computer working until we like got on the plane. Mm-hmm. And it was because it was really my first time taking, I hadn't taken a week off since I started the business.
You didn't know how to take a week off.
No, I didn't know how. I didn't know how to delegate or anything. And so it was pretty much trying to do a week and a half's worth of work before I left. It almost killed me. It was just like, it wasn't fun. Yeah. I remember getting on the plane and being like, extremely unsustainable. Like if I ever want to take a vacation again, I've got to figure something out.
Okay.
But it was that piece of when you realize I'm not letting go of anything. I'm not really willing to let go of anything.
It's hard to let go. Well, it's too much caring. You know, it's that Goldilocks curve of not enough, too much, just right. It's a really great thing that you care that much and that you want to have the quality for your clients and you know what to do and you want to make sure. And that's wonderful until it starts not being helpful. And the more you do it, the less helpful it is. So it's finding that sweet spot where the amount that you're doing and what you love to do. I think a lot of it, I'm still seeking that and I will continue to work on that as I grow as a leader.
So last final words for leaders that are having a hard time letting go of responsibility and giving it to their team.
I think projecting yourself forward, where do you want to be? Where do you want the business to be in the future? And how is what you're going to do, what you're doing right now, going to get you there? And I think when you start seeing that gap, then turn to some people that you believe could help you sort of explore that gap and help your folks, help you change things so that your people can be invited in and make a difference. But if there's no gap there, if this is the way you want to run the business, nothing will change. You won't grow and let go. The business is stopped by you. But if you want it to go past you, you have to sort of figure out what it is that's important, the intent, and get out of the way.
That's great. Thank you for sharing some of your story and diving into mine a little bit. This has been great. Thanks.
Same. Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode. If you haven't, I encourage you to check out episode 1 and 2 of this season of the Ripple Leader Podcast. On those episodes, we dive into topics that we all face, like how do you define your values and how do you lead your team confidently when you don't have all the answers? Now, if you liked this episode, I want to ask, do us a favor and go to your favorite podcasting app. Maybe it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher, and leave us a review. We watch those, and we want to know what you think about this podcast. Also, if you really love this episode and think more people need to hear about it, share it on Facebook and tag the Trebuchet Group in the post. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you, and we will see you next week.